Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Hours down, one left on this first day of the week. And Rafael Goyeneche joins us now, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, to talk about this and that and the other thing as well. How you doing, Rafael?
Hey, Tommy, how are you? I'm fine.
I'm well, sir. Happy New Year. I don't know that we've spoken yet or not.
Yeah, same to you.
Let's talk about, I want to start with Bourbon Street and barriers and everything else. Normally at this time, we'd be talking about the start of the year as it relates to violent crime. What do we see in the New Orleans on this as of January 13th, 2025, as it relates to other years?
Well, I mean, so last year, the Crime Commission has been issuing weekly crime trend reports, and we fully intended to talk about crime trends, you know, the first week of the new year. But what happened on New Year's Day changed all that. You know, but the bottom line, we've seen now in 2 years of double-digit crime reductions. As bad as it was in 2022, things began to improve in 23. That improvement accelerated into 2024. And 2025 got off to a horrible start. So, you know, we had 15 homicides on the first day of the new year. But is that the norm? Of course not. But the reality is the numbers are that, you know, we are, you know, historically, January has been pretty violent month in the city of New Orleans. And were it not for New Year's Day, we'd be well below what the historical trend has been for the month of January. But, you know, that's woulda, coulda, shoulda, and that's not what we're dealing with today. We're dealing with a terrorist attack and the consequences that go along with that. And that's what we're dealing with as a city right now.
And I don't in any way mean to diminish that at all, or you know, it's like the thing about other than that Mrs. Lincoln, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful at all, but the point I'm making is, but for that, it would not be a bad start to the year with violent crime in the city, and because the terrorist attack is an anomaly. You have to look at it that way statistically, do you not?
Of course it is, you know. And, you know, look, the police department, the overarching consideration that I think everyone needs to take and realize and acknowledge is the police department with less resources. Over the past 2 years, we still haven't rebuilt the numbers of the people that we need to adequately police the city. But the police department has found a way forward, a way around that. They're relying on technology. They're relying on their partnerships with other law enforcement agencies, more particularly the Louisiana State Police. And they're also engaging in proactive policing. They're not waiting for someone to dial 911. They have identified through their intelligence units, the hotspots, and they're using strategies that allow the police department to identify the violent and repeat offenders and being very successful in building cases against them, arresting them, and those offenders largely are remaining in pretrial custody. We've seen the numbers of inmates in the jail grow by over 300 in 2024, from what it was at the beginning of 24 to what it is today. And two-thirds of the inmates in the local jail are in there for felony crimes of violence or felony weapons offenses. And the other property and drug offenders that are in pretrial custody have extensive criminal histories that the judge took into consideration in setting bail that has resulted in them remaining in pretrial custody because they do pose a threat to public safety. So in many respects, the criminal justice system has been improved, being more strategic in how they're dealing with the issues. They're targeting on the offenders. And by doing that, they've been successful in bringing down violent crime and really all categories of crime over the past 2 years.
Let's talk about Ann Kirkpatrick. Not a great media moment for her with the barriers. And I just talked to J.P. Morrell, and there's a city council investigation moving forward about bollards and also about the archer barriers and the maintenance and storage of them, et cetera. Institutional knowledge, I think Newell referred to it as. Do you know what we have, what we don't have? Your thoughts about that and what the MCC's role in any of that would be?
Okay, so, you know, it's already been talked about that there's going to be investigations. And there's at least three investigations that are on, one by the council, one by the attorney general's office, and now with Bill Bratton, he'll be talking about, and part of what he announced last week is that he'll be delivering an after-action report on what happened on January the 1st. If I heard the press, if I understood what the press conference last Friday disclosed. So the bottom line in all this, you know, there is no role for the Crime Commission to investigate all of this because it's being done by entities already. But having said all of that, you know, you saw the national media in many respects beating up on the police department in general and Kirkpatrick in particular. And what we found out is that the first time Ann Kirkpatrick was aware of some of these mobile barrier devices was when they were hauled out of storage the day after the terrorist attack. And what she said on camera was, you know, I wasn't aware that we had these. And she's being criticized for speaking the truth. If they were in storage, and I heard, you know, in the last segment, you were talking to JP, and, you know, you noted the fact that, you know, those were purchased in 2018.
17, I think it was. Yeah.
Okay, 17. And they have been in storage. Well, why haven't they been deployed? Why aren't those hand carts available? If those hand carts are available, are they operational? So there are more questions than we have answers in all of this. The police department's responsibility is not to purchase or maintain that equipment. It is either the Department of Public Works or Homeland Security. We don't know. Part of the investigations that are underway will identify who's responsible for all of that. But the police department's role is to use the assets that they have available to them. And we know now that those bollards were non-functioning. They've been reported as being problematic almost from the first year of the time they were installed. And we're finding out that they didn't even have the capabilities to, if that terrorist had decided to try and run through the barrier, according to the information, if they were even up and they weren't because they're broken, he could have defeated them just by crashing his truck over the top of those things. So that is the equipment that was there was purchased by the city, not by the police department. And it was purchased almost 8 years ago. And some of that equipment has either not been maintained by the city or was kept in storage by the city, and we're going to find out why and who's responsible for failing to deploy the equipment that was available.
And the reason I bring that up, first of all, I'm an Ann Kirkpatrick fan. I think it was a cheap shot by the media, and I would just advise everyone, now that you have local knowledge of what really is going on and the way it was presented, to maybe evaluate to evaluate the information that you receive now that you know what actually happened and the way it's being reported. Maybe you evaluate what you see in the future along those lines. But with that being said, Rafael, when it comes to the practicalities of this, the way things work, the logistics of it, you can't expect a new police chief to come in and say, "Okay, let's see what the city has in storage. Let's see everything that you've purchased in the last 10 years. Let's see where it is, who's maintaining it, this or the other thing." That's just not fair, is it?
Well, of course not. You know, so we were talking, or at least I heard you talking about the consent decree. Mm-hmm. Earlier on. And the reason for the consent decree is the police department wasn't following its own rules. The problems were not that the police department didn't have adequate rules. The problem was that the police department wasn't utilizing their rules, wasn't measuring their compliance with their rules. And what we're finding out with now the security equipment, the bollards, the barriers, the city wasn't maintaining that equipment, and it resulted in a tragedy. Just as with the consent decree, the police department wasn't following their rules and wasn't measuring their compliance with those rules, it set into process a number of cases, the Danziger Bridge case and other things that surfaced in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, that resulted in the city of New Orleans and the Department of Justice entering into a contract. And that's what the consent decree is. Now we're going to do an analysis of what the city did with the security equipment that was purchased, the barrier systems that were purchased by the city of New Orleans in 2017. And we're going to find out the answers to all of that. But that's not the police department's fault that that equipment wasn't A, operational, or B, not available to them.
So that's what, and I guess talking to JP, I'm going to get back in a minute after the break, Rafael, talk about consent decree, but I was talking to JP and you heard it. So about city council investigation, about attorney general investigation, Bill Bratton is a guy that's going to drill down, and that's how we're going to find out what happened to these barriers, what happened to the Archer barriers, what happened to the haulers and the eighth upgrade. And you know doggone well that I don't have the name of the company in front of me right now, but we spoke to the president, Peter Whitford, last week. You know doggone well that they updated the city and said, look, we have these new haulers available if you guys want to upgrade, because they want to sell them, right? You got to believe that at some point the city was aware of that to make these things more manageable. Anyway, bottom line, that's what the Bill Bratton investigation is going to peer into, and Department of Public Works as opposed to NOPD and all that stuff?
I believe so. He's going to look at that, and I also believe that the Attorney General and their partner in that investigation, the Inspector General, they're working together in concert with their post-action review. That'll be looked into by them as well.
All right, we'll take a break, come back, talk about consent decree. Rafael Goyeneche, our guest, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, 921. Tommy Tucker, back in a flash, WWL. 927, talking to Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, about the Bourbon Street terror attack, about the Bill Bratton investigation. Who is it, an investigation, a security review, Rafael? And who has subpoena powers? How is that likely to unfold and work?
No, so Bill Bratton is primary. Their main mission is to take a look at the security that the New Orleans Police Department and the city of New Orleans has for special events. So that includes the French Quarter, which is basically a 24/7, 365 special event. It's an ongoing, never-ending party down there. So he's going to take a look at security in the French Quarter, particularly the Bourbon Street area. He's going to take a look at Mardi Gras. And I left out the Super Bowl because that hay's in the barn already. That is, that plan is a plan that's been deployed all over the country at various Super Bowls. And the city of New Orleans has been preparing for the Super Bowl for over a year. For this. So, and we've hosted more Super Bowls than anybody else. So really what Bratton's going to be taking a look at is primarily security in the French Quarter, And with Mardi Gras, with the new CR1 designation, and then he's going to issue an after-action report as to what transpired, the set of circumstances that transpired on New Year's Day, and that will be a public document when that is released.
And I use the word investigation. It's more of a review, I guess, because he doesn't have any kind of subpoena powers or anything, does he?
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't.
So let's talk about Mardi Gras and what that's likely to look like, because I asked Arthur Hardy the other day about it, and he said that. So I asked Arthur Hardy what it would look like, and he mentioned, you know, a guy wearing a mask, dragging an ice chest down the street. That's kind of like what Mardi Gras is all about. So I don't know, with the CR1 rating, how do you see that playing out? Raphael, you're a local.
Well, it remains to be seen because, you know, CR1 designations are usually given for, you know, hard target venues that can be made hard. By definition, a parade is a soft target, and there's nothing you can do to really make it a hard target because of, you know, you're talking about parades, you know, in other parts of the country. They're not 5 and 6 miles long. They're not, you know, millions of people packed over a parade route. We've been doing this for well over a century in this city, and Mardi Gras is just a celebration in this town, where, you know, people, not just locals, but from all over the world come and enjoy it. And if you try and turn this into security that we experienced post 9/11 for air travel, it's going to essentially kill Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we're looking for totally eliminating any type of terrorist attack on Mardi Gras, the only way to do that is to cancel it. And a CR1 designation is something that really I don't see how it can be applied to Mardi Gras in the strict sense of the word, because you're going to have to modify it. And when you start modifying it, you're acknowledging that there's certain risk that we're going to have to learn to live with, or we're going to have to decide, make a decision to stop Mardi Gras. Because there's no way, in my opinion, you can totally eliminate the risk for a terrorist attack on a Mardi Gras parade.
You just summed up what I've been asking and trying to get to the bottom of, because J.P. Morrell, when I asked him, said, well, you know what, you can't, it would be hard to ignore what you ask for the CR1 rating and they make recommendations, and it's hard to ignore that. And I'm paraphrasing him here. But conversely, in terms of what you're saying and soft target and everything else, I don't know how you could have it as it exists now and still have a CR1 event, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Is that accurate, Raphael?
Right. It'll be in my opinion, yes. You know, I think that it's you can't make Mardi Gras a hard target and not maintain it the way that it is right now. It cannot be done. I mean, you're talking about over a 5 mile parade route. You're talking about having to block off all of the feeder streets. And those are streets that people need to get to and from their homes and home and work and everything. So you're going to have to block all that off. We're still 300 officers down from where we were in 2019. So you have fewer officers. You're going to have more security where you're going to have to block off all of the streets. You're going to, you know, as Arthur Hardy talked about, I mean, we saw where this terrorist used an ice chest in the French Quarter, not one but two, in which he planted bombs. And, you know, we're talking about tens of thousands of ice chests being, you know, used at parades on a nightly basis by people. So how do you eliminate all of that? How do you change all of that? And who's going to enforce all of that? You're going to have, you know, a TSA type of approach. And that's just not practical. It's not possible in, you know, the context of a Mardi Gras parade.
And the only thing I would add is the harder you make it for people to get into an area, it's also the harder for them to get out of an area, right?
Exactly.
All right, let's talk consent decree. There's going to be a hearing today. I don't know if people are expecting a sea change or a light switch to be flipped with what happens today, but take me through the legalities of this, if you will, please, Raphael.
Okay, so the consent decree basically, as I stated earlier, was a contract that was executed between the city of New Orleans and the Department of Justice. And we're now 12-plus years into that. The hearing today is for the judge to, after hearing evidence, to receive some final evidence as to consider putting the police department into the final substantial compliance phase, meaning that now that all of the conditions of the consent decree have been substantially complied with, and according to the agreement that the city of New Orleans executed under Mayor Mitch Landrieu with the Department of Justice, that contract says once you are in substantial compliance, it starts a 2-year wind down period. And there are less oversight. It'll be more on the police department using the data that they've been collecting to prove to the court that they maintain compliance with the consent decree. And if they can do that over the next 2 years, then the consent decree terminates. So late Friday afternoon, the city of New Orleans filed a motion in court to attempt to end the consent decree permanently right now, skipping the contracted agreement between the city to enter into the compliance 2-year wind down phase. Now, I don't expect that the Department of Justice is going to agree with that. And you have an agreement that was executed by a previous mayor, and the judge is going to enforce the agreement that was put in place 12 years ago. And so I don't understand what the city's strategy is. I think what they're seeing right now is, I'm scratching my head wondering what the city's hoping to accomplish. Because if the goal is to end the consent decree, they don't want to go into the sustainment period. That to me suggests that the city has no intention of maintaining the reforms that have been accomplished over the past dozen years. And if they're not going to maintain those reforms, then I think you're going to see the police department slide back into the bad old ways. And, you know, we may be dealing with this all over again some point in time in the future. Part of what has been accomplished is that the police department now knows how to measure their compliance with their own internal rules and policies. And if it isn't measured, it can't be managed. And the city's filing this motion on Friday, to me, is a head scratcher, because the police department has their act together now. They're measuring their compliance. And for the city to say, we don't have to worry about this anymore, to me suggests that they don't have any intention or any desire to see the police department continue to measure their compliance with the consent decree.
And that's opening the door. That's an invitation to have it start all over again, is it not?
To backslide, of course. I mean, we've seen that happen previously. So the police department has maintained that. If the police department's going to be doing it anyway, we're talking about, 2 years of proving to the court and to the public that the police department has, in fact, changed its culture and is, in fact, engaging in constitutional policing on a daily basis.
Thank you, Raphael. Any final thoughts?
No. Let's just hope that the new year starts to get a little bit better for everybody.
I hope so. What you said about the consent decree is everything I was thinking, because I don't get it. Scratching my head as well. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Raphael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll come back. We're going to talk to Gabriella Harlemert, a coordinator for Audubon Aquarium Rescue, about a manatee in Lake Pontchartrain. We'll lighten up a little bit. 938, 22 till 10. Traffic now, WWL.